winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program. This is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off this week. It may be mid-December, but the political news doesn't take a holiday. And here to help me break down the week that was, we welcome in a native of the Bronx, Joe Spector of the USA Today Network, Ithaca native Rachel Silberstein of the Times Union, and a man who hails from lovely Long Island, Ken Lovitz of the Daily News. Now, last time viewers saw us, we heard about the Pay Commission's report. The report didn't come out until Monday, but some of the news leaked. And a lot of people might be surprised to know that a lot of the lawmakers aren't happy with what was proposed. Ken, we'll start with you. It seems a little ironic. Why is it that?
It's ironic because they got what they wanted, which is the first raise in 20 years. It's going to make them the highest paid lawmakers in the country. It's over 3 years. They'll go from $79,500 to $130,000 over 3 years. But they're not happy because the commission of four comptrollers, former and current comptrollers, put some reforms tied to them. So basically they said they limited a restricted outside income to a congressional model. So now if you're a legislator, you can only bring in 15% of your legislative salary from outside income. And then also they got rid of stipends, you know, that you got for chairing a committee. And so the lawmakers went ballistic. They're saying, well, we didn't sign up for that. We didn't know they were, you know, they don't have the power or the authority to limit outside income. They don't have the power authority to get rid of stipends.
Joe, I mean, is this legit? Could they not have seen some of this coming?
Well, when they voted for this, they thought it was just going to be to raise their pay. Mm-hmm. But what the commission said is that it all falls under the title of quote-unquote compensation. And their argument is that we could restrict your outside income, we could take away the stipends, because it all falls under the umbrella of compensation. Now, is that legal? That's what's going to be decided. So there's two things here. One, the state lawmakers could override what the committee did. They'd probably have to do that before year's end, though, because it gets sticky about a sitting legislature voting in regards to their own pay raises. Right. So there's that piece. Then you'd have the legal piece of whether or not the commission overstepped its bounds when it comes to the state constitution to strip them and basically make them a full-time legislature.
What are some of the leaders saying? The Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie was in town this week.
So Carl Hastie actually was the one who raised objections and said there's a problem. They really should have seen this coming because the same thing happened in 2016 with the Pay Commission. The talks fell apart over, you know, outside income requirements. But it seems doubtful that he'll be able to find a partner in the Senate that will join him in his effort to block this from going through. There is also, it can be challenged in court between now and January, so that could be another avenue to try to block it. So it just depends if there's like the will to really prevent this from happening. It seems like in the Senate, they have Audrey Stewart Cousins, the incoming majority leader, says, you know, we embrace some form of restriction on outside income and we plan to do it this legislative session.
Can we expect a legal challenge, Ken, you think?
Yeah, I think there will be a legal challenge. Where it comes from remains to be seen. Will one of the lawmakers bring it? Will it be an outside group, which will make it tougher? Look, you know, you kind of feel you can understand both arguments here, because on the one hand, this commission, you know, by law, typically lawmakers adjust their own pay going forward, and they also would decide, do we get stipends? Do we restrict outside income? But, you know, so they have an argument. There's an argument to be made that this commission that wasn't elected by anybody is, you know, making law. But on the other hand, they agreed to a panel because they wanted the raise and they didn't want to do it themselves. So basically this was their way of avoiding having to take the vote themselves, and it backfired on them. And we saw this with the commission, you know, when Elliot Spitzer was governor and, you know, there was an opening for state comptroller, the legislature agreed, yeah, we'll do a commission. They'll determine on, you know, give us three candidates or five candidates and we'll pick from there. But they didn't pick any of the lawmakers to be on that final list. And so at that point, the legislature had power and said, well, we're not going to do that. And they went ahead with their own. Here, they got rolled. And I think they should be mad at themselves for going along with it.
Well, I mean, you got to remember, too, that this has been a long-standing issue in the state legislature.
We should mention they haven't received a raise since 98.
Well, that they haven't received a raise, but, you know, many of the scandals in Albany are tied to lawmakers' outside income. And so, you know, for good government groups and even Andrew Cuomo, who has supported limiting outside income, I mean, this goes to one of the real big issues in Albany for a long time. If you're a state lawmaker and you're getting paid as such, should you have outside income? And then who are you ultimately responsible to? Is it your employer, the outside income, oftentimes lawyers? I mean, we saw it with Sheldon Silver and Dean Skelos, both convicted, in Silver's case, because of the outside income that he received. So it's a reform that many groups say is long overdue, but on the other hand, the way it was done.
And a really relatively small percentage of lawmakers actually earn a significant amount of outside income. So you have to wonder, how far is Hastie going to take it? Because, you know, the majority of lawmakers are really hoping and expecting a raise. For just a handful of legislators who have another job.
Right, and a lot of his members are from New York City, where 79.5 doesn't carry as well as it does in Malone or Plattsburgh.
And a lot of it's going to come down to does the end justify the means? Because really, that's what it's going to come down to. Because, you know, editorial boards, you know, a lot of lawmakers, good government reform groups, they all agree that they like the idea of limiting outside income. But then the question is, do you have a non-elected commission, or do the lawmakers, should they have been the ones to have done it?
Sounds like a good poll question to use this week. before we move on to another topic, we touched on this a little bit next week, but let's say this does go through. Ken, there are a lot of, say, Senate Republicans who make a good amount of outside income. They're going to be in the minority here by quite a bit here in the next couple of years. Who knows after that? Could we possibly see a lot of, say, veteran lawmakers just say, you know what, I think it's time to leave Albany?
Yeah, and there's Democrats too, but certainly the Republicans, you might see openings. And I think, for me, that was one of the more curious decisions. Not that they actually did it and moved to restrict the outside income, but it takes effect at the beginning, not the end, of 2020. 2020 is an election year. All the lawmakers are up. There is an argument to be made that had they done it later in the year, at least the lawmakers would have had to decide. They knew the rules. You know, I'm running for re-election. I have to decide, do I want to adhere to this? But here, they ran in November under a different system, and now you're telling them the rules of the game have changed. And that, as much as anything, has made them angry. And I think you could see some leave. Some will try to transfer their financial interest to family members, put it in a blind trust, whatever they do. Others might leave. And that would create a lot of special elections coming in 2020.
All right, let's move another week, another sentencing for a former key player in state government circles. This time it's the former head of SUNY Poly, Dr. Elaine Colliero, sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for his involvement in the Upstate Development bid rigging scandal. This was a man who was the face of nanotechnology, certainly here in the Capital Region, and now he's going to jail, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, what a fall from grace indeed. I mean, here's somebody who Governor Andrew Cuomo and previous governors all hailed as this visionary. Mm-hmm. He built this Albany Nano Center here in the Capital Region that is just booming. It led to Global Foundries to build a huge plant up in Malta. And then what Governor Andrew Cuomo tried to do was really use Calieros to expand this into Utica, into Rochester, into the Buffalo Billion. And that's where things started to unravel for Calieros. You know, obviously he was convicted in this whole bid rigging scandal. And that's the end of it. So it really left it now going forward. It leaves a lot of questions about the future of all these facilities. Calieros really was the face of these. He helped broker a lot of these deals, and now he's out.
This is a guy who earned the trust, too. This guy has been around for a long time, has worked for a lot of governors. You know, a lot of people just put their trust in him.
I think the most baffling thing about Calieros, which separates him from the other players in the scheme, is that he didn't benefit financially from it. And I think it baffled the judge as well. He just did it to earn brownie points. He's the only one who didn't get paid in this bid rigging scheme.
It's not clear what his reputation of brownie points is.
When we think of corruption, we think of greed. We think of wanting to enrich yourself. And he did it, you know, just to be nice.
Rachel, we'll stick with you. Also in the news this week, Chris Bragg of your paper reported this week that the Department of Health, the DOH, has refused the paper's request for emails between the agency and Crystal Run, a major donor to the governor. Bragg reported earlier this year that the $400,000 in donations to the governor have been the subject of a federal investigation. Why is DOH not able to give these emails out?
So they claim it's, you know, the search criteria is not narrow enough. But apparently we did some research and it seems like they do have a database where they can search specific emails to see if there was any correspondence with Crystal Run. Although, I mean, our experience with the Cuomo administration and all these departments is this is a typical reason they reject FOIL requests. Mm-hmm. I think in this case, what's exceptional about it is, you know, prior FOIL requests they've rejected and complied with, but like redacted all the relevant information. Mm-hmm. Specifically, the application that Crystal Run filled out to get this grant, they redacted most of the pertinent information. So it just seems like they're not being completely forthcoming.
Transparency has been an issue, Ken, the last few years for sure, get with FOIL requests.
Absolutely, and this is a governor who in 2010 promised the most open, transparent government in state history.
Sunlight really is the best disinfectant.
It has been anything but in so many ways, and FOIL requests in particular, they could take months or even, you know, over a year or more. And so I think that is an issue that has been ongoing for sure.
All right, let's hit on a couple more issues here. This week, Governor Cuomo was a guest on a radio program in the Capital Region, WAMC, where his father used to hop on quite a bit. And he was asked about the $280,000 his campaign paid to an Iowa consultant. And the governor said, really? That apparently was news to him. Seems a little odd he wouldn't know.
When you got $30 million and you're spending it all these different ways, maybe it gets lost. But I mean, to not know that that much money went to a consultant, the point is though that he there continues to be questions about whether he's going to Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, there was an AP report a couple of weeks ago that said he was putting out feelers to go there, reached out to Iowa Democrats. Mm-hmm. He said he didn't. I checked, others checked with some of the Iowa people there. They were unaware of any trip planned. He says over and over again, he's almost as daily now, is he going to run for president? He keeps saying he's not. But, you know, there's these little things that happen where that raise everybody's antenna and says, oh, wait a minute, is he quietly making some moves here?
But we should also note those payments took place in 2014 to 2016. And at that time, even if you don't buy his argument that he wasn't looking, you know, they said that they hired this firm because it was really good with digital ads and all these kinds of different ads, new age ads. But, you know, Cuomo had been believed to be looking at a potential presidential run for 2016.
Yeah.
And when Hillary Clinton got in, you know, he obviously didn't pursue it. So theoretically, maybe that's what was going on as well, maybe testing the waters. But we don't know that. That's pure speculation. But it was a couple of years ago. And I just have not seen anything he's done. A matter of fact, the opposite. You know, he hasn't done much to move ahead in Iowa, but in New Hampshire, the early states. But also, since the election, during the election, it was all against Trump. It was all about Trump. Mm-hmm. But since the election, he's really been focused on a lot of New York issues. Mm-hmm. Seems like he's kind of snapped back. So, that to me also.
Yeah, but then he's having his inaugural at Ellis Island.
Pretty good backdrop.
Yeah, so it's a good backdrop. But, you know, I mean, he's you know, to Ken's point, I mean, he was all Trump. Then he meets with him down in Washington. He's trying to get money for him for the Gateway Tunnel down in the city. So, you know, is he pulling back a little bit in hopes of trying to broker some kind of agreement on there? Or is he not as aggressive trying to tie Trump to Mark Molinaro and his political opponents?
Right. And if he sees an opportunity, certainly, I would think he would take it. If he thinks I can get in and be a legitimate candidate, maybe he then does. But you know what? By saying no right now, he avoids being Hamlet on the Hudson too. Yeah. His father perseverated over it for, you know, months, years, and got, you know, mocked for it as Hamlet on the Hudson. He doesn't want that. So maybe next year at some point he sees a pathway to victory and he jumps in for the good of New York, for the good of the country. But right now he doesn't want that image.
And you look at his paper resume. as a Democrat, as a progressive, he's got some pretty good things on there right up at the top.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All right. Before we go, Rachel, I'm going to go to you for our last story, a doggone fascinating story in the Capital Region where longtime state senator Jim Todisco is asking for a pardon, not for himself, but for a dog named Luna.
Luna the dog. She's caused a furor in the Capital Region. She's from Troy. Apparently attacked another dog and its owner. But there was a really sort of stringent law in Troy that said, you know, one bite and you get put down. And, you know, people came to this dog's aid, but they unfortunately, and it prompted city council to actually change the law and make it more lax.
But it didn't go retroactive?
But it wouldn't go retroactive. Mm-hmm. So this poor dog is still on death row and everyone's sort of rallying behind her. So Jim Todisco jumped in and asked Governor Cuomo to pardon little Luna. And, you know, it seems like I asked the governor's people if they said they're looking into it, trying to look at the law and see if, you know, the governor even has constitutional authority to pardon a dog. There was one other case in Maine where the governor of Maine.
I saw that. Yeah.
LePage, the always colorful governor of Maine, who's outgoing, he pardoned a husky named Dakota, I believe, who kept running away and attacking the same neighbor's dog. And in that case, it sort of spiraled in a similar manner. The courts just didn't honor it. They said it doesn't hold any weight in court for a governor to pardon a dog. So I guess, you know, we'll see if the governor responds to it.
It's a rough issue.
Oh, okay. And we'll end it there. Our thanks to Joe Spector of the USA Today Network, Rachel Silverstein of the Times Union, and Ken Lovett of the Daily News. Should a legislative pay raise be tied to a limit on outside income? That is our poll question for the week. Let us know how you feel at nynow.org. Last time around, we asked, do you agree with the pay commission that state lawmakers should get a significant raise? And over three quarters said no. Sue in Elmira, watching on WSKG, said, they make more in this part-time job than our middle class in our upstate rural New York State. It's obscene. The little work they have done here should result in a pay cut. Eddie in Yonkers, watching on WNET, voted yes. If the combination of significant raises, limits on outside income, and stipends are applied together, then New York will hopefully be able to discourage corruption. And finally, Dolores in Montgomery County told us, if the legislature worked full-time, I would support a raise. This is not proportional to the amount of work that is done. We appreciate everyone who took the time to vote. To do so this week, just head to nynow.org. Our website is where you can find hundreds of our past programs and all the links to us on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. There's also a link to the excellent Capital Confidential blog. It's also available at timesunion.com. With election season now in the rearview mirror, we can all look forward toward 2019 and maybe even 2020. We recently sat down with some of our fellow Capital journalists to ask what they thought may lie ahead for Governor Cuomo here in Albany, and who knows, maybe in Iowa or New Hampshire.
Every indication I have from my reporting as of right now in December 2018 is that he won't run for president. He's not making moves to early primary states. He's not visiting other parts of the country. He's still very New York focused and he's a New York guy. His energy and attention are on getting things done in New York. So that does not comport with any traditional campaign for the presidency that we've seen. Of course, it's a non-traditional time in our politics. Essentially nobody predicted that Donald Trump would beat a field of a dozen plus experienced candidates on the GOP side. No one predicted that he would defeat Hillary Clinton in the general election, someone who brought significant government experience to the table. And Donald Trump's campaign style perhaps means that the old playbook should be torn up, shredded, doused in petroleum, and then set ablaze. So is there still a path to the presidency for Andrew Cuomo? Maybe. But he's certainly not walking the traditional path. He's not doing any of the traditional things that we've seen candidates do for years and decades. And that's in contrast to many other Democrats who we do see working toward bids for the presidency in 2020. So everything in my reporting indicates that he is not running and has no plans to run for the presidency. So what does that mean? It means that he's going to continue to focus in New York. He's going to continue to focus on infrastructure development, something that he's been talking a lot about, really since after the early legislative victories in 2010 and 2011. He started to focus on infrastructure as early as 2012. You're going to talk about the New York City subway system, trying to overhaul it. And he's going to talk a lot about what is the next big project. He's already touting the replacement for the Tappan Zee Bridge as a major achievement in the field of infrastructure. He's talking about the Gateway Project, which would overhaul and add capacity to the railroad tunnels that cross between New Jersey and Manhattan underneath the Hudson River. I think we're going to hear a lot about that in term three. And I think right now, I think that he's going to try to keep the same basic approach of fiscal moderation and social progressivism. The exact bills are going to change on that front. In 2018, we heard Democrats, including Governor Cuomo, talk about how they're going to very quickly push forward and enact legislation that would strengthen abortion rights in the state. I think that seems like a very safe bet to happen early in 2019. We heard talk about more gun control legislation. I think that with Democrats in control of both houses of the legislature, that's a sure bet to happen in 2019. Governor Cuomo is going to enter his third term, unlike any other points of his time in office, with an all-Democratic state legislature. And that's going to enable him to push forward and enact progressive social legislation that has long languished, and sort of the items that the governor was unable to achieve with a split legislature. On the one hand, that split legislature, with Republicans in control of the New York State Senate, helped Andrew Cuomo as he tried to enact a progressive legislative agenda and social agenda while being a fiscal moderate. On the other hand, now that Governor Cuomo has an all-Democratic House and can push through things like abortion fortification, stronger gun controls, perhaps more expansive immigrant rights legislation, it's going to be harder for him to maintain his status as a fiscal moderate. And I think the real test for him in this third term will come with policies of taxation, of resource distribution, of government spending, and of rent and tenant policies, which are up for renewal in 2019.
That's the big question. You know, what does he do now? I mean, he's obviously won election three times, fairly convincingly each time, and the various scandals and corruption that have surrounded his administration never really resonated with voters to the point where he was in strong, had a strong chance of losing. So now we look at 2020. Does he get into the presidential mix? I mean, does he dip his toe into it? Does he go out to Iowa? Does he do some of the basic things a potential presidential candidate does? He says he's not interested. But, you know, his attacks on President Trump, taking increasingly more stances on national issues than he had in his first, most of his first two terms. You know, is he positioning himself for 2020? He says no, but obviously the speculation continues. And back home, he has now something he hadn't had before in his first two terms. That's a Democratic-led state Senate. And he has had a cozy relationship with Senate Republicans during his first 8 years. They were helpful with him on fiscal issues like a property tax cap. Now with Democrats in charge, what will he do? He has certainly moved to have a more progressive agenda in his most recent years. How far does he go on that? I mean, let's talk about a single payer health care system, which would potentially double the state budget. How much is he going to want to pursue that? He's already raised concerns about it. Recreational marijuana, is that something he's going to come out in full force and support? Abortion rights, he already says he wants to strengthen New York's abortion rights. So the first few months of his administration in a third term with a Democratic-led Senate will really kind of set up where the state's headed.
I think he's going to preside over a very new legislature controlled by Democrats. His only worry might be that the Democrats might run away with the agenda, because Cuomo's still a fiscal conservative. He still doesn't want to spend a lot of money. He still wants a property tax cap. And some of the things that the Democrats now want, like single-payer health care, much, much more money, billions of dollars more for school aid to fulfill a decade-old court order, those things might be, you know, running away from the agenda that he would like to keep. He no longer has the Senate Republicans to sort of keep the lid on spending. And of course, there's the bigger question, is he running for president? He says, no, I'm not, I have no interest, I just want to be governor. But he has taken a number of steps, including joining the National Governors Association. He's the number two guy there. I can't recall him ever even attending a meeting of the National Governors Association before. So he's certainly trying to raise his profile. He's also going to have his inauguration at Ellis Island to highlight immigration policies and presumably to talk about the Trump's policies that Cuomo vehemently disagrees with. So he certainly is raising his profile, even though he says he's not running for president. So that's why the talk is not going to quiet down, I think, for the next few months on that.
The interviews we conducted were for a larger project we're working on. We'll give you more details about that next week. Until then, I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.